Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire. He knocks it down.
But Carl slammed it home.
Garland upstairs. Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk. And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media Family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. And today I'd like to start with a little story. It's about a Cavs point guard winning over the hearts and minds of skeptics and non-believers with an explosive game in San Antonio. You guys know how this story ends. Don't ruin it for people that are experiencing it for the first time. You know how happy that ending is and how rewarding the journey can be. But while we're on the subject of skeptics and non-believers, Carter, how's it going?
It's going very, very well, Justin. We wanted to give you that victory lap right off the rip, you know, really celebrate all the good fortune that has come to you in your life. you bought in hard on Garland, and I believe we really had our first true, honest to God, like could be a star kind of performance from Darius Garland in his career. Do you think that's fair?
I think that's fair. I tweeted in the first half, but that was basically my dream shot selection from Darius Garland. It was clear that he wanted to come out and prove a point. Two quieter games. Like I felt that he played well against Miami. There were some times where he was a little hesitant, but they were throwing Jimmy Butler on him to start the game. They were certainly keying in on him because he did have a great half against them earlier in the season. So I thought that he came out with an aggressiveness and a mindset to go out there and be a scorer and be a difference maker. And it was just, it was by far the best game that I've seen him play. I think that goes without saying, but the fact that we've seen first halves like that from him before, where he comes out, scores 15 points, and then to build upon that and have an even better half, to score 37 points in 29 minutes, to couple that with all the assists as well, like it's one of those performances that gives you that flash of that star tier that we've really been waiting for when it comes to Garland.
Yeah, I mean, you call it a flash, I call it a firecracker. I thought he was so in control of that game from start to finish. I mean, the playmaking was on point, 7 assists to 1 turnover. And this is something that you've talked about a lot, is that, you know, everything feels better when you got aggressive Darius. And it's funny because, you know, I feel like this is, I remember they used to say this about Steve Nash, where they'd be like, Steve, you got to shoot the ball. Mm. Like, the offense will actually run better if you shoot the ball. And I really definitely find that to be the case when teams are lunging at him and having to react to him before they you know, sit into their base defense. Everyone else was able to eat at a much better rate. And honestly, this game could have been an even bigger margin. There were a lot of open shots that he generated that were not cashed in on. So, mm-hmm. it was just total, you know, tour de force game. And he's got to figure out, you know, and here's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping this is a light bulb moment for him where it's like, you know, even if the threes aren't falling early on, by taking them, by making a Derek White, who's a very, very capable defender, lunge out at me the second I square up to the hoop, everything gets easier for everyone. I mean, he got a couple wide open Hartenstein dunks running the pick and roll where the defense just was overcommitted to him. The finishing was on point. He sought contact. He didn't try to just sneak it past the defense too much. It was just kind of the perfect Darius game.
It really was. And I think it's worth noting, of course, that DeJounte Murray wasn't active for the Spurs, and he's a great point of attack defender. But we've seen like countless matchups in the past, just because a guy was out or just because a team doesn't have a strong point of attack defender, that doesn't necessarily mean that Garland's going to capitalize on that, that he's going to go out there and take advantage of that situation. And there certainly were plenty of other good defenders available. As you mentioned, Derek White is a really good defender.
Who's not a good defender, though, is DeMar DeRozan, who is barbecue chicken every time he got put on Derek.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well. The theory of DeMar DeRozan's defense, which it has improved, but Darius is starting to get, like, when he does have these on games and the shots falling, he's really tough to defend. Like, he has great handles. He's really quick. I remember coming into this season, one of our questions was, well, does Darius have the kind of the speed to get around very good defenders? The answer is yes. Like, that is very clear at this point. But we've talked about the importance of game film that's usable, that is constructive and giving coaches good minutes to point to. And I think that this is one of those games that can be that. where the coaches can say, look, I know you're a pass first player. You're always going to be looking to get other people involved. But when you're assertive like this, it opens up opportunities for everybody else. It makes everything easier. And of course, the presence of Kevin Love has helped unlock this, I think, in a lot of ways. That was something Garland acknowledged in the post game. But at the end of the day, more than anything, it's come down to decision making with Garland. This is the decision making. This is the assertiveness that we need to see from him on a much more consistent basis, because he is capable of having these kind of nights.
And here's the thing about him is that, you know, yes, Kevin is helpful. We know this. It's obvious. He keeps the ball moving. He finds guys in transition faster with his outlets. Everything is better with Kevin out there. But I do think it's important to note, it's not like Darius wasn't getting open looks at three all season, mm-hmm. you know? And I honestly wonder, this might be a little bit of a projection, but like, you know, you almost wonder if the scout says, you know, you don't need to fly over the top of the screen on him because he wants to probe.
Yeah.
And because we've seen it time and time again that despite everyone thinking he's a good shooter, you know, people don't go flying at him. And by the end of that game, they were flying at him, and the whole defense was discombobulated. And it was just, it's exactly what you wanted to see from him. It was just such a fun game. And, you know, I hope that this is, you know, a lesson for him. Again, like, he got 10 threes up. That is really the volume. That sounds like a lot.
11 if he had the toe on the line.
100%. And it's funny because, like, that does sound like a lot. And there's only a few players that can get to those, that take that volume of threes. I only think it's like 5 or 6 when I checked like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
But if he is to be the star that we're hoping he's going to be, then, you know, a lot of these shots that's kind of the shot diet we need to see from him. You know, that is the difference between very good starting point guard and star that bends defenses and makes people panic and opens up wide open cuts, like we've seen for the Dames of the world, the Trae Youngs of the world, the obviously the Stephs of the world. So, like, yeah, it's a high number, but I think that if I'm JB, I'm saying that's your new target.
Mm-hmm.
And no, if you go 2 of 10 on a night, I don't care one iota.
Yeah, I don't care either. And it goes into what I was saying prior to the All-Star break, which was Garland's shot profile had changed. Now, we hadn't seen this double-digit three-point attempt type night, but he was being more aggressive. His usage rate had steadily gone up. He was getting more comfortable, and he just wasn't shooting well. Remember, there was a stretch where he was basically averaging like 17, 18, and 7 without shooting well.
On like 33% from three.
Right, and that was one of those situations where I was like, I'm comfortable with that because I don't have concerns about him as a shooter. He's a good shooter. I think there's enough evidence out there. The form is good. We've seen the makes, like the percentages. He's above 40% for the year. I love pointing at the stats as when he's a starter, where it's 46-42 splits, basically. Like, this dude can shoot. So I'm not really worried about those outside attempts. I think, obviously, there's room for growth with his finishing on the inside. He can get his shot off better than I was kind of expecting this season. But you can tell he's going to benefit from getting stronger, from being able to absorb the contact and put the type of finish and touch on the ball that he's accustomed to doing when there's less contact, and that's really going to take his game to the next level. But the other thing I'd want to point out, when Garland does have these big games, something that's really encouraging to me, because this hasn't been the case in the past. I know it sure as hell wasn't the case when Kyrie and Dion were on the team, and I think the Kyrie Dion takes are lazy in comparison when you're comparing Garland and Sexton to them. I think Garland is obviously not Kyrie, and Sexton sure as hell isn't Dion. Like, the truth's a little in the middle there for both of them. But what I really like is when Garland has these big games, Sexton performs really well as well. You got 37 points against the Spurs here. Sexton, 22. Other top four scoring games for Garland this season. 29 points against the Spurs, Sexton had 29. 25 against the Sixers, Sexton had 29. 25 against Boston, Sexton had 29. Now, some of that's the consistency of Sexton, but at the same time, those are well above his averages. These guys play really well together, and when Garland is playing well, he makes things easier for everybody, including Colin Sexton. And the other thing I love about that is he's not having those games like we saw with Kyrie those first 3 years, where when he has a big scoring game, the assists are low, or when he has a high assist game, the scoring's low. In those top four scoring games for him this season, he's averaging 7.5 assists. And I think that's something that the coaching staff can point to and say, hey, when you are assertive, it opens up assist opportunities. You create shots for teammates at a higher rate than your season averages when you're scoring. That needs to be drilled into his head, because you're fighting against his natural tendencies, right? This is the adjustment from college, which he didn't get much of, to the NBA. It's a different game. The math is just valued a little different once you get to the pros.
Yeah, Dr. Khan, the chat just said it's Sexland for a reason. We were always waiting for some kind of synergy between Kyrie and Dion, and they were just truly oil and water. And frankly, I think the big thing that we probably missed on with that particular pairing was that Dion just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know, like I think, like, if Dion
was also a personality thing for sure.
Yeah, sure. But if he had gone on to be like a fringe all-star somewhere, then okay, maybe. But like, he just wasn't, they weren't in the same atmosphere as each other, where I still feel, I think that's the other reason I'm not super interested in pitting Garland and Sexton against each other. One, because that's not any fun, but two, because of the fact that, like, I feel like they're pretty similar tiers as players right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Sexton is obviously at a level of consistency that Garland should aspire to. And one of the things I do enjoy is that they do have that positive off-court relationship. Garland, before the game, talked about how much his teammates have helped him get through the losing, because these are competitive guys. Like, especially the top picks that the Cavs have, Garland, Sexton, and Okoro are massive work ethic, really competitive, hate losing, but they get along really well. And I do think that that's a great environment. It's something that's really encouraging to see. And you're right. Like, it is interesting that both of these guys, one, the team plays better when they're both out there, and they're also at that same caliber where you can see them, like, figuring it out game by game. And to me, this is what's really rewarding, because there's no denying it sucks when you're losing. Some of these stretches this season have been really tough to go through. But when you're rooting for a team that you believe in the young talent on that team, seeing them put it together in these flashes, in these games, in these stretches, to me, like, that's one of my absolute favorite things when it comes to basketball, is guys that I'm invested in figuring out what they can and can't get away with. And that is so much fun, especially when you're in these early stages before you're kind of getting into the more difficult, annoying conversations of, okay, well, how's this work in a playoff matchup? Now that we are in the playoffs, what adjustments do we have to make? What personnel changes need to be done? Like, that kind of conversation can be a little stressful. It's also fun to be competing at that level, but this space, this, like, area where you can just enjoy the development of these guys, it's so much fun. I'm happy that we're at this point that we're at right now.
Yeah, it's this is, well, let's kind of take a look at it, you know, like, this is supposed that we're, I think we're right before the sweetest spot that there is to be a fan. Mm-hmm. Which is, in my opinion, the, oh, they're good year.
Yeah.
Like, we're not there yet. We're on a curve here. It does feel like we are building towards something that didn't, and maybe this is just, you know, blind optimism. And maybe if you ask me in 2 weeks, I'll give you a different answer. But I never felt like, in the core of my heart, that those post-decision Cavs were figuring it out or had any real structural direction.
No.
It felt like, okay, you know, if Kyrie goes bananas, they'll win. If he doesn't, they'll probably lose. And sometimes if he goes bananas, they'll still lose. And, you know, just this hodgepodge of role players. That's the, and, you know, I'm kind of developing this thought in real time, because I'm also thinking, I also didn't really have that many role players I was that invested in. even a couple years in,
mm-hmm,
to the rebuild, like, you know, we had, like, Tyler Zeller that we were just desperately hoping would work out, and people like that. And now, you know, I feel like this team is, like, 8-10 deep in dudes I'm actually really, really interested in watching when they're out there. They're not all perfect, but they're all interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just a fun spot to be right now, where, yes, the L's are going to be tough. The season being as weird as it is, we talked about it with Rafa and Joe on the last pod that, you know, the lows are going to be lower in a season like this.
Yeah.
And
inconsistency is maddening, right? Like,
the lows have probably been lower for this team than any other team in the league. And I really mean that. I mean, mm-hmm. they've lost by 30 points several times. They've nearly lost by 40 a few times. Like, it's been some ugly losses. The 10-game losing streak was about as bad as I've ever seen. But you know what? The highs have been so much, they felt less transient, mm-hmm. even if they have been within the context of the season, because there's been stuff that I go, oh, that's going to be a thing that they're going to be able to do next year when they're healthy and right and older and all that stuff. Like, it just feels better this year. And I'm curious to I wonder if the rest of Cavs Twitter agrees. My guess is no, given the infighting. But for me, I don't know, man. I feel like they're moving towards something.
Well, so much of it is dependent on how you value the young core, right? Specifically Garland, Sexton, and Okoro. Because I think most people kind of acknowledge what Jared Allen is. We saw him and Sexton got ranked in ESPN's top 25 under 25. It was pointed out with Allen that as good as he is now, there's reasons to be intrigued about his upside and where he can go from here, because of what he shows as a passer, because of the touch he has on his jump shot and the possibility of adding a corner three and the kind of stuff that takes a rim running center to that next level where they're a really, really high impact guy, which again ties into why I'm very comfortable paying him, and I'm not really blinking at that. Sexton, of course, being the other one that was ranked top 25 under 25 because he's really damn good. But the thing that's encouraging to me, so obviously your outlook on this team is going to be dependent on those three. But what I like is that they've been a little resilient. Like, there's been a lot of setbacks this season because you look at the bubble. The bubble training camp that the Cavs had, and it was, okay, we're confident in Darius Garland as a playmaker. He's going to be that primary guy. Sexton's been working on playing off ball. He's really kind of rounded out that skill set. Now we're going to have secondary playmakers in Kevin Love, Larry Nance Jr., Kevin Porter Jr., Dante Exum, and Matt Dellavedova. Guess what? That entire list of players got wiped out for one reason or another. Like, the setbacks have been painful, but when we talk about the offense maybe not always having the wrinkles we'd want to see and stuff like that, well, your entire game plan and the personnel you anticipated having to execute that got wiped out. Like, it hasn't been here throughout the season. They've dealt with so much turnover there. And despite the setbacks, like, there's no denying what happened with KPJ is a setback for the team. At the same time, we came into this season with Tristan Thompson leaving for Boston. Andre Drummond not agreeing to a contract extension. That was the reporting that they tried to work one out, and that didn't come to fruition. Now we have a franchise center, and we also have a 22-year-old backup center who has said his goal in life is to be the best backup in the league. That fits in
such a funny thing to say. I can't shake how funny that is.
Dude, I love it so much, but again, we're seeing now with Jared Allen out with a concussion, he fits. Like, he does interesting stuff. I did not think at this point, 2 weeks after the trade deadline, I'd be more comfortable with Hartenstein taking threes than Dele. I didn't think that was going to be a thing. I didn't know he could pass like that. Like, it's, in my opinion, it's another feather in the cap of the scouting department saying, hey, there might be a diamond in the rough, and he might not end up being anything, but he's intriguing. He goes towards what you were saying before of, there's role players that are worth being invested in that are interesting when they step out on the floor. When Jared Allen is fully healthy and you have both centers in there, you go from Jared Allen, which is a known commodity, fun as hell, really good, fits with the young core, to interesting backup center who has foul trouble, which isn't as big of a deal when he's the backup center.
Yeah, doesn't matter at all. And yeah, I mean, are we ready? Are we ready to talk about the Hart Foundation here?
Yeah, I'm here for this.
You know, it's funny. Our Discord will tease me because I remember, because as we mentioned when they acquired him prior to the trade deadline, I was like, I can't believe Denver's trying to go to war in the playoffs with Hartenstein at their backup center. And well, I guess joke's on me because I really like him. He's big. He plays vertically really, really well. He does foul, but you know, that's not the worst thing in the world with a backup five, especially if it means you're in the mix. Mm-hmm. I do think you know, like, I do think there's a lot of value in just being around the rim. You know, it's not, and he's definitely been there. He's got good length. The passing.
Oh, hardened dimes, baby. Hardened dimes.
What is this? half season with Jokic, and he's throwing some crazy passes.
You saw the quote about that, right?
No.
So when he first came over, one of the things he said was, "I learned how to be a great passer by watching Jokic. All those minutes on the bench, I picked up things." And I was sitting there, I was like, I don't think that's really something you can replicate, because we're talking about possibly the best passing big man in the history of the NBA, or at least a guy that's in that conversation, and he's certainly not that. But the fact that he's a good pick and roll center that makes nice reads out of the pick and roll, like, that is a skill set that typically isn't developed at 22. Now, there's obviously room for growth. There's room for improvement. I like that he settled down a little bit and isn't popping threes at the rate he was against Utah. But, like, it's an interesting skill set. He's a player that I'm invested in now. Like, what he does in the minutes he gets is pretty noteworthy. He's averaging, like, 3 assists a game with the Cavs.
And that's what's, you know, again, we're talking about a backup center here. Like, this is a dude who's 22 that, you know, probably will never be a starting quality player, but, like, teams need quality. Like, you look at the Memphis Grizzlies this season, they're like 15 deep with NBA players, and mm-hmm. that is so valuable for them. I mean, the fact that either Hartenstein or Dean Wade are going to be collecting DNPs once Larry comes back and Kevin's minutes restriction is gone
mm-hmm.
is really an embarrassment of riches in the front court. And also a great lever to pull, you know? That's what's so nice is with that, you know, because you're going to have Jarrett, you're going to have Kevin, you're going to have Larry. And that fourth big can be whoever you want it to be, given the context.
Mm-hmm.
If you need some size, it's going to be Hartenstein. If you need some spacing, it's going to be Dean. And I really trust that both of them are going to be able to, you know, fill that role very, very capably. And it's just fun. It's just fun right now to kind of, like, see this team develop. Yeah, Hartenstein is very, very interesting, especially for a 22-year-old. He's got a little bounce, but the passing is really what catches me, because I feel like when you're a bench big, you need something that's like, you need a core differentiator, you know, something that's like, oh, he can do that. You know, for JaVale, it was verticality and just being long as all get out, especially late in his career, you know. And I almost wonder if he's a little, and I think people will cringe because of the money he's gotten and, you know, his situation. But, you know, you look at someone like Mason Plumlee, who isn't a freak athlete, but is a really capable passer and is going to be a backup big in the league for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And he's got that extra pop, you know, that's like, okay, yep, he's a good backup center and he's going to be helpful. Now, I think he gets a bad rap because he backed up Jokic, and it's like when you back up LeBron on the wing, your plus minuses are always going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that's kind of the thing that's most intriguing to me about Hartenstein so far. It's not the shot. It's not the size. It's the, ooh, he makes you go, whoa, with some of these passes. And that's really fun.
It is really fun. And I know there's definitely people that are rolling their eyes because I'm a lunatic. And getting
it's fine, because anyone who's watching right now is riding high, baby.
They are riding high. But people are going to laugh because I'm a crazy person and I'm getting excited about a backup center. But here's where the value actually is. And I think that this is a really important point to point out, is when you have someone like Hartenstein that, okay, we're going to give him a shot as the backup center, and kind of like you're feeling comfortable with it right now. The nice thing about that is you now no longer have to use draft or free agency capital in trying to find a backup center. They don't have to worry about that position right now because you have Jared Allen and Hartenstein that are filling that in. So now you can focus on whoever you draft. Let's say you draft a wing. Now you can use your free agent money to get a backup point guard, to get that secondary ball handler to help bolster the second unit. If you get another draft pick, whether that be in the second round, middle of the first, or whatever the case may be, you can take a flyer on another wing because you're not worrying about drafting for need. You can go at those kind of high-value positions where yeah, there's a lot of guys that have potential, and it all comes down to player development when it comes to wing players. Now you can take as many shots at that as you want as you try to fill out this rotation. So I think going from where we were at the start of the season, where there were bad free agents at the center position, that at least in the unrestricted market, and now you have two, I think that's really, really valuable from a team building standpoint, because it makes their decisions a little easier this summer. You know what you need to focus on. The list gets a little bit shorter, and that makes things, it makes such a big difference.
Now, I did notice, Justin, while we're here, because you made me curious, because I actually did not remember what his contract was. He does have a player option at the end of this year.
Right.
So we could deal with an opt-out, but he is an end-of-bench guy, or he is a bench player that probably could use a little more security. I wouldn't be surprised to see him opt into that $1.7 million at the end of the season, just for the security. I mean, he is certainly not as excited as we've been in this early run. I don't think anyone's like, that's a 10-year NBA player just yet.
No.
So I'll be interested to see what he does. But either way, you don't, as you said, it's a bit of, you know, the devil you know versus the devil you don't. And like, there's security in knowing, okay, Jared Allen and Hartenstein for this team on this timeline, two 22-year-olds at the five, fine by me.
Yeah, and absolutely.
That's where what's so interesting about this roster is very few places do I go, not fine by me. You know, the starting five, mostly fine by me. I think they need they could use a superstar wing like every other team in the league. And, you know, if they are able to go draft one, then things will juggle around. But all five of those players in my rotation, perfectly happy. And then you have Larry off the bench as your sixth man. Perfectly happy there. I think their backup wings leave a little to be desired right now, though. Oh, Torian Prince is looking good. I feel like he's really rediscovered his stride.
And we talked about it when he was out, right? That yeah. He was a major difference maker, that someone that was actually confident creating his own shot. And some of them are ill-advised, but that was something that this team sorely needed, along with what Kevin Love's been bringing.
Yeah, and when the jumper is going, it looks really, really good. And they really, really need that too. And I was kind of worried because, you know, it's been reported that he might need surgery for that ankle. And
oh, geez, I missed that.
Yeah, and I think Fedor reported it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, if he comes back, maybe he's just going to be a shell of himself, you know, the rest of the way. I think he's found a way to contribute at least early on. There were a couple bumps right when he first came back, but you know, he's certainly not someone you hate on a team where the Cavs are right now.
You know who's really contributing, Carter?
Who?
Your boy, Isaac Okoro. He is breaking through that rookie wall like the Incredible Hulk right now. Kevin Love has unlocked him. And small sample size, Theater, none of this is sustainable because he is currently shooting since 100%. Kevin Love came back. Yeah, he's shooting 76.5% from the floor and 100% from three. But I do think
he's yamming on the Spurs.
Dude, he's yamming on folks.
Step backs.
He's confident. Oh. And the spacing, like, this is what we've talked about. It was evident when Dean Wade was out there. It's evident now that once Kevin Love is out there, Okoro is in that dream role. And when we were debating about, okay, well, if Nance is starting and Love's out, how does this affect Okoro? Would you opt to switch for a player like Torian Prince, someone that has an outside shot? We walked our way back from there previously, where it was, okay, well, the season's about developing these guys. Let's just get Okoro to take the right shots, focus on developing him. He's getting better each and every game. But now that we actually see Kevin Love out there playing meaningful minutes, contributing, spacing the floor, being someone that draws attention, providing secondary playmaking, it opens up off-ball Okoro, which was always going to be, as a rookie, his number one way that he was going to contribute. It was when we did 9 months of draft pods, that was the thing. This guy is someone that's going to take some time. He's not a finished product. He's a raw rookie, but he's at least going to be able to contribute with these cuts and this off-ball action that hasn't been possible with the personnel that they've had available. And now that, once again, now that the opportunity is there, it's really nice to see him cashing in on those opportunities, because we needed that. We needed the flair on offense every now and then, because we believe in the defense, but at the end of the day, offense is a little sexier.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, if you, this is where I think people might roll their eyes because, you know, they'll see last three games, 9 points, 17 points, 11 points. Like, okay. But, you know, like, when you're seeing him do all the other stuff on the court, like, he was driving DeMar DeRozan crazy last night.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even got calls for some cheapies that were not fouls, like, straight up.
Those were reputation calls for the Spurs.
Yeah, classic DeRozan grift, which, like, he's made a career off getting the line. There's no disrespect, but, like, there were a couple, like, whoa, I can't believe you called that on him. So, you know, when you're seeing that, you just need enough for him to survive on the other end. Like, that's the thing. Isaac Okoro, if he finishes his career averaging 12 points a game,
mm-hmm.
it's very likely he had an awesome career.
Yeah.
You know, and that's you know, that and it sounds silly, but it's not.
Yeah, I wouldn't put that ceiling on him, but at this
no,
point,
no, I'm saying, like if that is where he ends up, like, I'm happy with that. If he's 12 points a game on efficient shooting, that's great.
While being, like, an elite defender.
Yeah, so and being a pretty solid ball mover, and yeah, I don't know, man. I think that he really, really is impressing me right now. And so much, and it's such a good reminder that so much of this is about situation,
mm-hmm.
and it's about, you know, it's about who's around you, and
context is so important. Like, it's,
and that's why these catch-all metrics suck.
Well, I mean, I think it was last season where we had Dufour and Partnow on, and we asked, like, when it comes to guys on the rookie contracts, how do you value these catch-all metrics? And the consensus was basically, I wouldn't put too much stock in it. Like, there's some value in catch-all metrics. They are flawed. They don't capture defense properly, which is really important when you're talking about someone like Okoro. But when you have stats that either factor in previous years or it's going off of the averages, like, averages for rookie contract players, unless they're coming to the end of that rookie contract, they're not really valuable because very few guys on their rookie contract are their averages. Usually they have flashes well beyond what they're doing, like what Garland just did, or they're playing below it because these guys are inconsistent. They don't have the same polish. They don't contribute on a consistent level. And therefore, looking at their averages isn't a reflection of what their upside is as a player. So I think that's really important to keep in mind with Okoro. We don't need to repeat all the context over again when it comes to him and this rookie class as a whole. But man, like, it's one of those situations where it's like, I wouldn't put a ceiling on him because he's another one of those ridiculous work ethic guys that's just out there trying to compete, trying to get better every single game. And yeah, when you're guarding the best players on the planet every single night, you're going to give up points. But if you really look at the film closely and you see the positioning he's in, you see how he's making them uncomfortable, making them take, even if they're making the shots, they're taking it from spots they didn't necessarily want to get to. And that's really impressive when you're talking about a rookie player.
Yeah, I feel like for him and for Sexton, we need to stop doing this thing where we go, what are you going to be at the end? And instead mm-hmm. get a lot more incremental with our thinking. Because if you treat Colin Sexton and his arc so far incrementally, what's the next thing you got to work on?
Mm-hmm.
Every time he's been able to not knock that thing out of the park.
Yeah.
You know, and for Okoro right now, it is find ways to scrap and survive on offense to be able to justify you being on the court in high leverage situations. You know, I think the next thing, so after he clears that hurdle, I think the next thing we'll say is you need to work on your handle. You got to get your skill game up. But, mm-hmm. you know, with these high work ethic guys, I think, again, the Cavs are making those kind of bets that they're going to get to that next step. They're going to keep walking up the stairway. You know, going back to Colin Sexton, one thing that we used to complain about like crazy with him was if the three-pointer wasn't there, if he was in one of those slumps, he functionally just would become useless because he'd be a high-usage, low-efficiency offensive player. Let alone, you know, not taking the shots we always wanted. But, like, when he had those major slumps to start last season, for example, he was a guy who wasn't efficient. But you know what, Justin? The last five games, he's 3 of 23 from 3. still has just slightly above league average true shooting.
That's like crazy. The fact that he's efficient even without that shot falling at kind of his career rates is a really good sign.
Like he's gone through a slump, and like you can literally watch the ball coming out of his hands on these 3-point attempts where he's like, nope,
yeah,
not happening. That's going to be a miss. And the fact that he's getting to the line, I thought last night was the best cutting game, or I'm sorry, two last night. Yeah, it was last night. Mm-hmm. Sorry. My timeline's all messed up because I watched the second half this morning on DVR. last night I thought was the best cutting game of his career. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, he was just slashing in the half court for easy buckets on a night where he couldn't hit by a three again. Still getting threes up, by the way. Still getting up five threes a game, just under in this stretch. They're just not going in. So, you know, I'm just really, really encouraged to see, again, that this team just makes more sense. Every day that this team gets healthier, they make more and more sense. Now, I do think it's going to be another integration period once Jarrett comes back, because they're kind of playing five out all the time right now.
Yeah.
And that does make the offense look better. But they also don't have a vertical threat that helps the offense look better. So I'm really, really excited to see this team finally get all the way healthy. I'm crossing my fingers, I'm knocking on wood that, you know, Jarrett and Larry are able to come back healthy, and you know, they can just get through this home stretch, because everything's clicking into place right now. And you know, so much of what we've complained about this team this season is when things aren't good, they collapse, the bottom falls out. We're starting to see just a little bit more resilience. They fought Miami tooth and nail to the end, even though Miami was just outclassed them from a talent and available healthy players perspective. We're seeing Colin find ways to be a positive contributor despite going through a major shooting slump the last five games.
Yeah.
So that's what I think I'm looking for as this season wraps, is can they dig themselves out of these holes? Because I think they're going to get a hell of a lot more capable than they were midseason.
Yeah, and you mentioned how the Cavs are on the cusp of kind of that sweet spot of that first year where, hey, they're good. Hey, they're a playoff team. And they're also on the sweet spot of this season, where now that Spurs game is behind us, the schedule is, I think Tankathon has it as the second easiest schedule in the league. Now, obviously, there's some context because you're going off of what the records currently are. Like, when Tankathon lists your six easiest games remaining, three of them are against the Wizards. And yeah, you can say the Wizards don't have a great record, but they're also trying to make the playoffs. Like, they do not, with Bradley Beal, I think next year will be the final year of his contract. You want to make a good impression. You traded for Russell Westbrook to make the playoffs. And it's going to be really interesting because I'm going to start this off by, first of all, saying I'm not trying to start beef here. I love, and everyone's going to know what this is about if you were following me on Twitter last night, because I was talking to my dear friend Anthony Lima, who I really, really respect. I really like.
We love you. We love you, Sports Boy Tony.
Yeah, friend of the podcast, has been so great to us. And there is always room for reasonable disagreements when it comes to sports. And when him and I have talks, whether it be DMs on the podcast or publicly, it's always in that space. But he got me thinking. This was already a topic I had on the rundown, and he kind of crystallized it for me as we were talking about this. Because he was mentioning, the Cavs, the schedule lines up, and there's a lot of teams that aren't going to be trying to win down the stretch because this class is so good. Even with the Flannan lottery odds, that's going to be the case. But when you look at the Eastern Conference, there's 12 teams ahead of them that are trying to make the playoffs. Like Washington, certainly trying to make the playoffs. Toronto didn't keep Lowry to tank. Chicago traded for Vucevic. They're trying to win. The only team right now that's ahead of the Cavs in the standings that isn't trying to win is OKC. They are just blatantly trying to throw games, in my opinion. Like, with the roster moves they've made, with the guys they've cut and whatnot, like, it's rough. So even though the schedule is easy for the Cavs, it's not like they can just jump to the play-in. There's 12 teams ahead of them that are trying to make that damn play-in. And I just don't understand.
And by the way, the Thunder are still ahead of the Cavs because that team just can't live.
Right.
That team is so institutionally strong that even when they're trying to tear it down, it's like, foundations are too good for you. Like, no TNT will blow up those foundations. They're always going to compete. But yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, How many of these teams are you sure will have a worse record than the Cavs? If you're looking at the bottom of the standings right now, I'm pretty sure the T-Wolves will, because they are full on, for the love of God, please don't let us lose our pick to Golden State.
Pistons, Magic, and Houston, I think, are the four. You're not getting down to that tier. But here's the thing. Like, this is a strictly academic discussion, because I don't think the Cavs are going to start sitting the young guys, trying to throw games or anything like that. That is not the culture they're trying to build. So this is a purely hypothetical discussion. But what's kind of become clear to me, and my new philosophy, is you got to have a solution. Like, I'm done engaging with Twitter critiques and stuff like that. That is just a critique without a solution. Like, when people will criticize, okay, well, when teams try to take away Garland, there's no secondary playmaker. Well, I understand that, but who would you suggest using in that spot? Like, you're missing Kevin Love, you're missing Larry Nance in those games often. You're missing a whole bunch of guys that would function in that role. So what is your critique? Like, I'm willing to have all those conversations, because that is, to me, that is insanely interesting. That is what basketball conversation should be about. But when you talk about lottery odds, one, I don't think this team is going to tank no matter what, because that's just, it hasn't been in line with what they've been trying to build. But we can all agree lottery odds being increased for the Cavs is in their favor. We all understand this. We all, like, I love the young core. Adding another piece, especially in a draft that is loaded with guys that fit with this core, that is great. But I need to have, if you're going to say they need to lose more games, one, I never want to hear you say this team should be better than their record, because it's a lot of the same people making both of those critiques. And two, I want to hear your solution. Is it to sit Darius Garland and Colin Sexton? How do you think those guys, these competitive ass players that they've drafted and emphasized drafting these type of guys and bringing them into the organization, how is the team going to respond to that? Now, if you don't think any of these guys matter, that the young core sucks and we just need to get another top player, then maybe you are okay losing the locker room and losing everyone you have to get Cade Cunningham, or maybe a 10% chance at Cade Cunningham. But if you don't, think everyone on this team is garbage, like, I don't understand how you can justify losing the locker room to give yourself a slightly better chance. Like, that's just not where I'm at. Like, I don't think that that's the way to go.
And there are middle grounds here, you know?
There is.
I don't think that the team... Here, let's just say this. I don't think the team's playing anyone hurt.
No, like, and they really shouldn't.
And they shouldn't anyway, regardless of lottery, just because that's not really where they are as a team yet. Like you play guys hurt when you have a chance to, you know, win a playoff series or mm-hmm. win the championship. Like, that's where guys want to play hurt, you know?
And not when it's a condensed season where these guys are playing so frequently, because the last thing they need is for a minor injury to turn into a career-altering one. So, yeah, you're going to play it safe.
So they're already going to play it safe. We know that. And frankly, you know, I get it. I get if you're a fan that sees Cade Cunningham or Suggs or any of these top guys. Mm-hmm. And that's me forgetting a lot of the guys' first names, so I'm just skipping right past. I get it if you see these folks and go, I'm pretty sure if as a Cavs fan, I don't got a true number one. Mm-hmm. You know, I get that. I get why you would get there. I don't think the Cavs, by their numbers, by what we're seeing on a night-to-night basis, demonstrably have a number one that you know you're going to have 5-7 all-star appearances. By the way, there aren't that many guys that have that many all-star appearances. I'm not sure the Cavs have that guy right now. But, you know, all you can do is kind of bet on basketball karma. The lotto is a complete crapshoot. You know, mm-hmm. While I continue to disagree with that methodology for team building, that is the new reality. So you're better off just trying to be a good org, because good orgs reap rewards. You know, like if you're good and smart and you make good and smart decisions consistently, luck starts to fall your way. And you know what? If it doesn't, and we just are in this team tops out being the Indiana Pacers in this era. Well, you know what? I'm actually pretty okay with that. That team wins all the time. They never go through extended bouts of incompetence. Mm-hmm. By the way, they don't have the kind of financial support the Cavs do to go spend. That can kind of separate a small market team from another. Mm-hmm. But if that's really what they top out at, then you know, oh well, you took a crack. But as we've said a billion times, team building doesn't stop era to era on clean breaks.
Yeah.
If you have an opportunity to go get someone good and you build such a good culture that you can go win with them, go get it. Go do it. Go get yourself a true blue star. But until then, I'm just hoping the team gets as good as they can be without taking shortcuts. Because that's the thing. They're not taking, if they win so many games that they fall out of a good lotto odds and they end up picking 7th or 8th, it's not because they're taking shortcuts as far as I can tell. I don't see, I don't think they're going to be playing Kevin Love 40 minutes a game down the stretch to win games.
Dude, they just blew out the Spurs, where the only player over 22 that scored double-digit figures was Torian Prince. He scored 14 points. Everyone else was 22 or younger. Like, your wins down the stretch, like, even though the schedule is lightening up, you're still playing an insanely young team that's going to have growing pains, that's going to be inconsistent, that's going to make mistakes. We should know that by now. We should know what this is because, like, we've been talking about this. It was brought up in our Discord that, the name's escaping me who brought up this point, but he was talking about how earlier in the season when the Cavs were playing incredibly well that we kept saying, hey, the schedule is going to get really tough for a very extended period of time. This team's inconsistent. Like, I know this is fun now. Enjoy it while it lasts because this is going to get difficult. Now we're swinging the other way where this schedule is going to lighten up. These guys are getting more comfortable. Garland's a better player than he was at the start of the season, and the same goes for every other young player that they have. So they're going to be getting some wins here. And I think your point about, one, karma, which I happen to believe in, and two, just functioning as a good, competent organization is so damn important. And yes,
and it's fun, by the way. It's fun to be a good organization that has respect around the league, that every time they make a move, everyone's predisposed to go, oh, that, you know, like
those guys. Think about
it.
Yeah.
Oh, those guys did it again. And mm-hmm. like that's what I think the Cavs should be aiming for, because you know what? That's what's in their control to some extent. It's not completely in their control. There's always luck involved at any point. But you know what? The draft, a complete crapshoot now in terms of the lottery. Free agency, never going to be their road to extended success. But what it will be, any small market's golden ticket is being smarter than everyone else. So if the Cavs continue to build and be smart and build a culture that people want to be a part of, then, you know, they've done everything they can do for me as a fan to enjoy my experience. Because you know what? They can't guarantee me titles, but they can guarantee me that they're going to be run as well as they can be.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that's the whole purpose of this podcast is us talking about our views as fans, right? Like, yes, we have a partnership with the Cavs, but like this is us. Like, this is the way, this is our basketball philosophy, this is the way we think. And yeah, like, I'm not a crazy person. I understand how great a top pick in this draft can be. The odds just don't change a whole lot. And you know what? Yes, it would suck. It would suck if you fell out of the top five, but this is a really, really good draft. You're not getting maybe that clear number one guy or the guy that's ready to step in and be a clear number one from day one, but you might be getting another Darius Garland, Colin Sexton level prospect that you can develop. And you mentioned the difference between Cleveland and Indiana is the financial support you get from ownership and the willingness to spend. The other thing is, like, so many of these teams that hit a ceiling, like, let's look at Portland, for example. Portland's built a hell of a good team. They've done really, really well, but they hit a bit of a ceiling. They cashed in on the wrong guys when it came to free agency. But even with that, they've managed to retool and become competitive again. They just never pulled the trigger on that consolidation move. If you draft another guy and develop him to be another Garland Sexton type player where, yeah, maybe they're kind of a fringe all-star or better depending on how you evaluate those players, you can cash in. You can trade for a disgruntled star. You can follow that path. There is no one set way to build a contender. And frankly, Tanking is the least common way in the modern era, in the last two decades, to build a championship team. There are very, very few examples of that working, and that was before the lottery odds changed. So develop the talent you have. You can always consolidate down the road. And this ties into the conversations about Garland and Sexton. Okay, well, I'd almost rather go with a less talented player at shooting guard because, in my mind, good basketball is a certain way where you don't have two guards. Okay, that might be the case, but until someone actually comes along that earns that spot, something that team basketball justifies making a roster move, don't go down in talent just to replicate and be a worse version of a good team. Make the most of the talent that's available to you. That's all you can do from a team building standpoint, is draft the best talent available, develop to it to the best of your ability, and try to create a culture of sustainable accountability and, like, player development, like, especially with a small market. That is the only way that I see to approach this with the current lottery odds.
Justin, we're really soapboxing at the end of this one.
Oh yeah. No, buddy. Like, this is my sweet spot because I know exactly what's coming. Like, when I'm looking at this schedule, I feel like I've had a really good read on this season and kind of the ebbs and flows before they happen.
And I've criticized you when I think you're just wrong. Like, this isn't me just patting you on the back, because there have been seasons where, like, that was a fun season. I'm like, no, it was not.
Yeah.
And you know, there's been times where we've wildly disagreed, but I think you've generally predicted stuff pretty well. You've been like, you've had your finger on the pulse of, like, this part's gonna suck, this is where the narrative is gonna go, and it kind of gets there, like, a couple weeks after you say it. And I think you're right. I think as the schedule eases up, there's going to be a lot of hand wringing. But you know what, wins are fun, Cavs are fun, Sexland is fun, and I'm a happy camper on this day.
Enjoy the damn journey, folks. That's what this is all about. Thank you so much to everyone that has tuned in to listen to us soapbox, whether you're doing it live on YouTube, which if you are, make sure you like and subscribe. Share it. Let people know. Word of mouth goes a really long way, you know, when it comes to supporting the projects that you love. If you're listening via podcast, we love your support as well. Make sure you guys are leaving that rating. Leave a review. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chase Downs exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs!